Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, December 21st, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we had a nice little day in gold today.
We've had several good days in gold in the last week or 10 days. I mean, just almost remarkable day.
Well, the way I look at it is the, you know, Wall Street and the powers to be are on holiday, so they're leaving it alone. But we're still at 1,079, not a bad day, up 12. You have silver up 0.18 at $14.36. Platinum was up 15 at 876. Palladium was in the negative, down 3 at $556. The USDX today was down a little bit, 0.31 at 98.42. Crude oil still below 35. It was up a penny or up a point at, actually it was up a tenth of a point at 34.66. And the paper markets today, they were big triple digits early in the morning. They were still able to manage positive territory. As soon as this comes up here, well, they reversed it, 123 to the upside. So they did keep the triple digit numbers at 17,251, but it was sort of a little bit of a struggle for them today. The NASDAQ was up 45 points at 49.68. The S&P was up 15 at 2,000. And $21, the 10-year yield, still 2.20. Euro, up 0.46 at 109. Foreign markets were relatively quiet. Germany was down 1%. And so kind of it's going to be a quiet day until January 4th when we have full trading back in effect. Today, Toshiba, that's a pretty big company. They're cutting anywhere from 6,800 to 7,800 jobs. They're projecting a net loss of 550 billion yen, which is about $4.5 billion in U.S. dollars, through the fiscal year of 2016. And it's going to slash the jobs in its personal computer, the video product, and consumer electronic businesses. These job cuts equal about 3% of their overall employees, and they are also selling its TV plant in Indonesia. So Toshiba, they do lots of things. They also make nuclear power plants. They have repeatedly apologized for acknowledging it had systematically doctored its books over several years to inflate profits by $1.3 billion. So officials have said that the manager set unrealistic earning targets. And you know what? They're not the only company that's doing this. You know, and it just caught up to them.
What other companies do you know of any by name that are also doing this?
Oh, they get caught here and there. I can't recall one or two off the top of my head, but they get caught.
What I'm curious about, are we hearing primarily about Japanese companies?
No.
And because I'm wondering whether Toshiba's problems reflect the fact that Japan is technically bankrupt. I mean, their attempts to stimulate their economy and quantitative easing have failed. They're not getting anything positive about near zero interest rates or zero interest rate policies. Is that part of the reason why Toshiba's had to pull in its horns? Because Japan itself, the nation, is in some serious trouble? Or are these just coincidental?
You know, it's probably all of the above. I mean, the last company that I remember reading about was a Chinese company where they did this. And, you know, everybody sort of expects China to do that and so forth. But I think there's more corporations probably. They're just getting away with it. You know, it'll catch up to them. However, Toshiba is also in trouble because it operates and is decommissioning the Fukushima nuclear power plant that we all know that went into meltdowns after the March 11, 2011 tsunami. So, and they haven't yet calculated that impact on its books. So, you know, they're sinking into their second straight year, in red ink. So,
apparently they don't have any idea of how to stop this problem. And they must be attempting to do something, but what they're trying to do is something impossible. And however much money, whether they spend 50 cents or they spend, you know, 500 trillion, it appears that they can't solve this problem. So whatever money they're doing, they're just pouring down a rat. Whatever money they're spending on Fukushima is simply profit money, essentially, that they're just pouring down a rat hole with a fire hose.
Well, the media reports in Japan said that their losses forecast for this fiscal year would be a record for Toshiba, surpassing the massive losses during the Lehman financial crisis. So, you know, we look at this one company, and you also have to look at, well, what is going to be the ripple effect? Yeah. You know, is one ripple effect from Toshiba going to, you know, bring the world markets down? Highly unlikely. However, there are ripple effects that you might not see or feel, damages the whole system.
What can it do to Japan, which is already in a difficult situation?
Yeah.
You know, you look around at these things, and everyone talks about black swan events and domino theories, and no telling. Everyone's heard it 100 times. It could be any one of a score of different events that might be enough to trigger some sort of a global financial problem. But really, we've got that global financial problem. We've already got that. We're really, There's reason to suppose that arguably with global economies, not just in a recession, it's arguably in a depression. And even if it's not in a depression quite yet, it appears that it's going to be there pretty quickly. For example, an article here from Bloomberg, Siberian surprise, Russian oil patch just keeps pumping. There's the headline. In the fight for market share among the world's oil producers this year, Russia wasn't supposed to be a contender. But the world's number three producer has been pumping at the fastest pace since the collapse of the Soviet Union, adding to the flood of an already swamped market, helping to push prices to the lowest level since 2004. Oil prices are down where they were 11 years ago. It's actually in Gersa has actually increased its how much oil it pumps by about 0.5% in the first 9 months of 2015. But it hasn't it boosted its production as much as its rivals, the United States, which, despite all the problems with fracking and whatever, is actually producing 1.3% more oil now than it did a year ago, and Saudi Arabia, which is pumping out almost 6% more than it did a year ago. Now, you look at some of these things, and you got to wonder. Something crazy or something desperate is taking place in the world's oil production industry. It appears that virtually all of the world's oil-producing nations are bound and determined to keep pumping oil, even if their profits are diminished, even as the price is falling. They want to hang on to market share. Now, given that they are approaching a point where they may be giving their oil away, nobody appears to believe in peak oil. Nobody in the industry seems to believe that they're giving their oil away and they'll never get it back. You know, if they believed in peak oil, some of the oil producers would leave the oil in the ground and save it for a future date when it could be sold at a greater profit. Instead, they try to compensate for lost profits by selling more oil at lower profit margins. And they seem to want to sell lots of oil at almost any price. Those oil-producing nations seem desperate to sell some oil in order to compensate for whatever other cash flow problems are associated with the global recession. This apparent desperation to sell crude oil at any price tells me at least, that the global economic recession may be much more severe than is currently supposed and may already qualify as a global depression. The incredible cutthroat current competition between oil-producing nations and companies also implies that some oil-producing companies, I mean, this isn't news, people know this about this, but some of the oil-producing companies will go bankrupt in the near future, and some oil-producing nations may become so impoverished over the loss of oil profits that they will suffer internal revolts and government and perhaps government overthrows. Right now, crude oil is crazy. Right? You hear all kinds of crazy things. It might fall down below $30 a barrel. You hear other people say it's going back up to $100 a barrel. Nobody knows what's really going on here. And one of the points is if you want to invest in this arena, you do so at your own risk. This place is volatile. Here's another one. Bloomberg. And it's talking about, the headline is, ETF investors have spent $24 billion trying to call a bottom in oil. A wide range of investors collectively spent about $24 billion over the last 18 months trying and failing to call the bottom in oil. People keep saying, there's the bottom, it's down to 50. It can't go lower than 50. I know it can't go lower. And they bet accordingly into the market, it goes down to 45. And they say it can't go below 45, and they bet accordingly, and the market takes it down to 40, and so on. And the point is, they've been trying to name the bottom, and they've lost $24 billion, according to this report, trying to do this. Well, there are a host of reasons why, and some of them may be true and some of them may not, but one of them, the one that rings my bell in particular, is the idea of speculators versus investors. You know? Speculators are trying to make a fast buck. Get in there and see which way the wind is blowing right now and make a fast buck between now and next Tuesday. All right? Tomorrow. In the next hour. In the next, you know, micro trading and the rest of that. That's speculation. They're the ones that are betting that the price can't go lower than it is right now. And they are to be compared with investors who get in, take a long-term view, understand it's going to go up, it's going to go down, there's going to be a bumpy ride. But between now and, say, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, you can predict, you can probably predict what's really going to happen in terms of prices. All right? Where you get into trouble is where you try to bet on what's going to happen in the next 30 days. That's speculation. Investors take a longer-term view. I think the speculators are the ones that are betting they could call the market in the market bottom in crude oil, and they haven't necessarily called it yet. They may still not have seen the bottom, and they keep betting on it, and so far they've lost $24 billion. Another way to look at this is charts versus fundamentals. People watch the charts and they go, well, it's doing this. Here's the trend and here are trend channels and the rest of this sort of thing. And this proves this, that, or the other. Given the kind of market we have with the artificial stimulation and apparent control of the numbers, I'm not sure the charts have any meaning right now. I'm sure they do, but not as much as a lot of people would suppose. Charts tell us what has happened. Fundamentals tell us what is going to happen. Huh? Got inflation, got deflation. People presume inflation, prices must go up. But if you've got deflation in fact, and we may have prices going down no matter what you do. It may seem impossible for some prices to fall further, but in an era of deflation, lower prices are always possible. And then another way to look at this thing is wealth preservation versus financial gain. This is a little bit like talking about the difference between investors who are trying to preserve their wealth and the speculators that are trying to make a fast buck financial gain. But how many people are trying to preserve their wealth in this economy? And how many are looking to make a fast buck? Most are looking to make a fast buck. Most are speculators trying to find an angle where they can make some money quickly. We have less people, in my opinion, that are worried about wealth preservation, and in a what may be a deflationary economic period, wealth preservation may be the first order of business. Right? Maybe you got to sit back and rethink which is more important. Do I want financial gain? Do I want wealth preservation? Which one do I want right now? I think the significance of wealth preservation, it should be increasing, in my opinion. Doesn't seem to be happening that way, but it should be. And, one of the other ways of looking at this oil patch situation, everybody's just pumping, and people are investing in all of this. And part of the reason is that zero interest rate policies, ZIRP, have driven investors out of conventional investments because they can't make enough money off of them because the interest rates are set down nearer to zero, and they take on more risk. They've invested more in the oil patch. And it's one of the reasons Fed Reserve has held interest rates down near zero. It's pushed people off into taking more risk. To some degree, that appetite for risk that's been fed by the Federal Reserve has perhaps caused people to invest $24 billion so far in betting on where the bottom is in the oil and in the price of crude oil and not yet finding it. There's a bunch of things you can talk about on this, but my point is crude oil is crazy right now. It's the sort of thing that if you want to invest in crude oil, you better watch your step because it's like investing in Alice in Wonderland. We don't have easy fundamentals. We have government interfering, meddling with investments around the world and twisting them in ways where we wind up doing things that are fundamentally irrational, but on the immediate sense, in the speculative sense, they're rational. But in terms of investment, wealth preservation, they're crazy. We'll talk more in a moment. Let's take some commercials, and Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. We want to wish everyone who's listening to the program, calling in, send us email questions or whatever, Merry Christmas to you. Yeah, Merry Christmas from me, and I'm sure Merry Christmas from Melody, and we'll say it again before we're done there.
Absolutely. And speaking of Christmas, yeah, every year, the 12 days of Christmas, you remember that song, Al, on the first day of Christmas? Remember that? Well, over the years, for 32 years, they've always calculated what it would cost to purchase those 12 items. And, you know, they build in inflation from year to year to year. If you purchase those 12, the price tag for those 12 items in 2015 would be $34,130.99. Now, they say we have no inflation, but it still went up $198 more than last year's cost. And some of those items that went up, 9 of the 12 items in the index maintained their cost this year. The cost of the partridge in a pear tree rose 3.5%. And of course, this is done in a light basis. This was actually produced, I mean, you can find these numbers anywhere, but this was the PNC wealth management report. And the partridge in a pear tree was up 3.5%, primarily due to the growing popularity as a gourmet food. Turtle doves are up 11.5% due to increased grain prices. Al, your favorite, Lord's Leaping. Those prices rose 3% due to an increase in salaries. And
meaning the Lords of Wall Street. are leaping for joy because their salaries went up 3.5%.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know if 3.5% is actually enough to please them. It put a little skip. They're kind of skipping. I don't know if they're leaping. They're kind of skipping a little bit. Yay, we got 3.5%.
The five golden rings, believe it or not, even though we've had the drop in gold prices this year, that is pretty much the same as it has been for the past 2 years. If you're looking for a bargain, prices for nine ladies dancing, $7,553. 11 pipers piping.
Must be ladies down at the $1 million saloon, I suppose. I don't know.
11 pipers piping, $2,635. 12 drummers drumming, $2,855. Are exactly on par with the past 2 years. Again, the 10 lords of leaping, it's going to cost you about 3% more. The pear tree increased 1.2%. And what did we miss out? Maids of milking.
Maids of milking.
The only unskilled workers in the index held steady for the sixth straight year, reflecting the federal minimum wage. And here's something interesting that I did find this interesting about the convenience of shopping online. They calculated that the cost of the 12 days of Christmas gifts purchased on the internet, as internet prices tend to be higher.
Internet prices mm-hmm. tend to be higher?
Mm-hmm. And
higher than brick and mortar stores?
And this the 12 days of Christmas would actually cost you $9,495 more than buying in person. So I found that interesting.
That's just amazing. That's hard to even believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, 9,000 more, you're talking about otherwise, they're up $200 last year compared to this year. This mm-hmm. year's total is $200 mm-hmm. higher than last year's.
If you would have bought it.
Shop on the internet, and it's actually up $9,000 higher?
Unless you bought it in person, yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
That's astonishing.
Mm-hmm. It is true. I mean, people think they're getting a bargain online, and they really are not. It's the convenience of doing it. But anyway, there's been reports.
And all that extra money in Amazon is still going broke?
But he's making billions of dollars. So anyway.
Somebody's got to tweak their algorithm. Got to go in there and tweak their algorithm, Melody, and then maybe they could make more money. But
well, maybe they'll make some more money after they get the drones tweaked.
Send in the drones. I've got an article here from Bloomberg. This one's just a certain amount of another illustration, to my mind, of the kind of insanity that seems to be catching hold in this economy. The headline is, as pot growing expands, power demands tax U.S. electricity grids share on Twitter. It's from Bloomberg. That headline has probably half a dozen too many words, but what they're saying is the $3.5 billion U.S. cannabis market is emerging as one of the nation's most power-hungry industries, with 24-hour demands of thousands of indoor growing sites taxing aging electricity grids and unraveling hard-earned gains in energy conservation. Without design standards or efficient equipment, the facilities, and they mean the pot-growing facilities, in the 23 states where marijuana is legal, are responsible for greenhouse gas emissions almost equal to those of every car, home, and business in New Hampshire. Well, that doesn't impress me as being such a huge number, tell you the truth. We're talking about the facilities in 23 states. They have increased power. They're essentially, they consume as much power growing pot in 23 states as the power that's consumed to operate every car, home, and business in New Hampshire. You know, in New Hampshire, it's not Texas. It's not, you know, one of the biggest states in the union, so on. Still, some pot-growing operations have blown out transformers, resulting in fires. Others rely on pollution belching diesel generators to avoid hooking into the grid. And the demand could intensify in 2017 if advocates succeed in legalizing the drug for recreational use in several more states, including California and Nevada. Consumers seeking green lifestyle are likely unaware that their cannabis use could cancel out their otherwise low-carbon footprint. Ingrown growing operations in 2012, 3 years ago, racked up at least $6 billion a year in energy costs compared to $1 billion for the pharmaceutical companies. This is bizarre. They are selling, if you can judge by energy consumption, they're selling six times as much pot in this country as they are pharmaceutical drugs. I don't know what there's got to be discussion, consideration, concern in Washington. It says some facilities, pot growing facilities, may suck down as much as $1 million in power a month. You know, can you imagine growing enough indoor pot plants to consume, have an electric bill of $1 million a month? There's an implication in all this, and it is that there may be too much indoor pot being grown. Huh? If so, that means the supply is up and the price of and profits in growing marijuana should be declining. If they're not declining already, they should in the near future. Maybe pot growers will emulate the oil-producing nations and keep growing more and more pot no matter what the price decline might be. And here's another implication, you know, for another word to the wise. We told you already that maybe it's not the best idea to invest in the oil patch at this point in time. You know, be cautious. You might also want to think twice about investing your wealth in a new, gigantic indoor marijuana operation. Somebody comes in and tells you this is going to work out just as well as raising emus. They were the other white meat.
Well, if you start having brownouts because of the power
brownies
problem,
with your brownouts.
Brownouts with your brownies, and if you eat those brownies, well, you won't. It won't bother you so much that you have no power. You'll be like, far out, dude.
Yeah, right. Hey, cool.
Hey.
But whoa, we are living in a world where they are growing so much pot indoors that it may be shutting down some electrical grids.
Well, you know, Al, I mean, come on. If people can't see what a sign of decay of a society is, you know, when you have this type of a situation where there's so much pot being grown in this country, I mean, you know, how can anybody not think that this country isn't doomed?
I don't know about doomed, but it's definitely going to be a bumpy ride. See, when I was
there's no way we'll ever be able to grow our pot
the old-fashioned way, in the sunlight.
There's no way will we ever be able to get back what we had before, the ability to...
Actually, it couldn't be done. It's going to require some dramatic changes. And if we won't make those changes, even if we're bright enough to perceive...
We're not going to make those changes when...
We're not going to make the changes voluntarily because we are riding a tiger. And we can't get off this tiger in order to say, look, this tiger is no fun. I'm going to get off this tiger. No, you get off the tiger and the tiger is going to eat you. And the tiger, in my opinion, is debt-based monetary.
You know, when
we get off and the whole thing collapses.
I mean, when you look
at... We can't quit the racket. We're in too deep. And yet, if we stay, we are headed for disaster. We are darned if we do and darned if we don't. And it's been in the cards since we embraced a pure fiat, a pure debt-based currency back in 1971 when Nixon closed what was left of the gold window.
I saw a brief interview today of the guy of Apple, the head guy in Apple. And pretty much what he said that, hey, our corporation, we're being taxed 40% here in the States. There's no way we'll ever bring jobs back into this country. And besides, the people here aren't skilled. They don't have the same skills as that they can find in China. And what?
No, they can find the skills anywhere.
Not
those
to
skills
the, not
weren't
to the numbers,
in China 50
not to the
years
numbers,
ago.
Not to the numbers, not to the degree of the numbers. They outbeat us in the number of people and population.
Well, I agree.
So there's no way that they will ever bring jobs, even if they cut the taxes from 40% to 20% or 15%, they will not bring those jobs back to this country.
Well,
not when you have half of the population that wants pot grown in their states make it legal. And I mean, it's, you know, you're absolutely correct. You are correct. Something has to happen.
Yeah, there's going to be a terrible
problem. In order to
problem.
Make these changes, people need to be smacked, and they need to understand that, you know, there's big problems, and it's...
Well, you know, when they started moving industries overseas to China, they didn't have people over there. They didn't have a they had a lot of people, but they didn't have people who were trained to do the sort of work
now
they're
trained.
Doing right now. I agree. Now they're trained. And it didn't take all that many years for that training to take place. And the same thing would be true in this country if we could bring those industries back, right? We can get people back to doing the job, all right? It could happen. But here's another headline from Bloomberg, and it says, scientists ponder how to create artificial intelligence that won't destroy us. They're serious about this. The creators of artificially intelligent machines are often depicted in popular fiction as myopic Dr. Frankensteins who are oblivious to the apocalyptic technologies they unleash upon the world. In real life, they tend to wring their hands over the big questions, good versus evil, and the impact of the coming wave of robots and machine brains and what that wave will do to human workers. And they had a meeting in Montreal on December 10th. Scientists recognizing their work as breaking out of the research lab and into the real world grappled during the day-long summit on December 10th in Montreal with such issues as how to prevent computers that are smarter than humans from putting people out of work. All right? Now, how do we prevent this? Can we stop robots from replacing people? The article says, I think the biggest challenge is the challenge to unemployment. And they're exactly right. And the reason is because robots work cheaper than people. It's that simple. Right? And as long as that's the case, they are going to replace people. Right? You got a minimum wage of $15 an hour for people. Yeah, what's the minimum wage for robots? Probably down in the neighborhood of $3 an hour, maybe $5. What does that mean? It means if you're running a business and you want to stay competitive, you have to invest in robots. And people will. And those who don't are going to be driven out of business. They won't be able to compete. The future of robots versus human workers will be decided based on that simple formula. Who is more productive? Robots or people. What this is pushing us toward, the robots are inevitably less expensive to operate than people. You don't have to put out life insurance, health insurance. You don't have to all of that, retirement. None of that. Just build a robot. If you can afford a robot, put it to work. And is it possible for most people's lives to have meaning without work? This is one of the questions we're going to face as we get more and more robots into our society, and they're coming. This isn't a novelty. They're cheaper. And you talk about, Melody was talking about China earlier, a little earlier in the program, and how they had trained people. We did a report, an article, probably about 6-8 weeks ago, where they pointed out that the biggest industrial section of China expects to have about 80% of the workers replaced by robots by 2020. Robots are replacing Chinese. They're surely going to replace people in this country. And we are. Some people say the total unemployment rate right now, government says it's 5 or 6%. Some people say it's really 20% or more. There is a high probability that those 20% will never get a job. They are going to be replaced by robots, and they don't have the education, the intelligence, the work ethic. They're never going to get a job. We are permanently going to carry 20% and maybe 40% and maybe more of the people are going to be unemployed. And what does that mean? The implications are enormous, and the problems we're going to face trying to address this problem, we're going to have to change the society, change the political structure. All sorts of things are going to happen here. And they're coming at us. We're not talking about something 20 years from now. We're talking about something we're going to deal with in the next couple of years. We're going to start talking about it and considering it. And what are we going to do? I don't know. What we're going to do is take a break for some commercials, though, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Give us a call for the holiday season. Yeah. Want some stocking stuffers for those near and dear to you? Throw a gold coin in their stocking instead of a lump of coal and see if that doesn't brighten their Christmas. We've got an article here, Austria begins gold repatriation. Maybe you should too. Last week, the Austrian National Bank announced it brought 15 tons of gold back into the country. According to Reuters, a spokesman said the bank had begun repatriating gold from London in October. After the repatriation, Austria held roughly 65 tons of gold, or about 23% of its reserves, on its territory. Around three-quarters, 209 tons, were in London, and 6 tons were in Switzerland. So Austria is trying to get its gold back, and they are doing the same thing which we've already seen in Germany, the Netherlands, and Belgium. They want their gold back, too. And Texas passed a bill last summer creating a state gold depository. They've yet to build it. But the Lone Star State plans to bring home $1 billion in gold currently held in New York City. It's evidence of a trend. And it's evidence that some people recognize that they have gold in hand. You know, they talk about a bird in the bush. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Same thing with a gold coin. Gold coin in hand is worth two in somebody else's vault, and especially in a foreign vault. You know, a lot of people will advocate you got to put your money in a foreign vault. Take your gold and put it in a foreign vault where the U.S. government can't get at it. If there is ever a time when the U.S. government tries to seize domestic gold supplies, I guarantee you they'll be doing the same thing in foreign countries. You know, it would just be astonishing if the United States said, well, we're going to seize people's gold, and people in London or almost anywhere else in the world, there'll be exceptions, but their governments will also be in a difficult financial position, and they will also say, well, we're going to seize gold, and we'll worry about getting it back to the rightful owner after the emergency is over. So, I don't know. If you've got any gold, you really do want to keep it at hand, all right? If you're going to trust someone else, what it is unfortunate, and I wish it wasn't this way, but if you're going to trust someone else, you better be able to really trust them, right? Because otherwise, if you're taking your gold and you're putting it in someone else's vault, what do you get for it? You get a piece of paper, a promise to pay. You get a promise, you deposit 100 ounces of gold in someone's vault, and they give you a piece of paper and say, we promise to give you your 100 ounces anytime you ask for. But what they don't say is, unless, of course, there's a national problem, a national emergency. The government seizes the gold. They pass laws that restrict us from doing so. We are unable to complete your withdrawal because there's no gasoline or electric power, who knows what. I mean, we warn you on this program time and again. What you want to do is you want to get, in our opinion, you want to invest in something solid, something tangible, something you can hold in your hand, and you want to stay away from the paper investments, which includes stocks and bonds. It includes bank accounts and pension accounts. It even includes receipts where you say, oh, here, we're going to give you a piece. You give us your gold, and we're going to give you a piece of paper. Well, if you're going to do that, you better be sure who you're dealing with. Because my, you know, worst case scenario, if things really start to break down, I guarantee you that some of these foreign vaults, some domestic vaults, people are going to go over there and knock on the door on Monday, and they're going to say, I want to get my gold. I want to get my gold. And there will be nobody there. And when they finally open the vault, guess what? The vault will also be swept clean. We live, it is unfortunate, it's sad, it's not what anyone wants, but we live in interesting times at least, and volatile times and potentially dangerous times. And you want to protect yourself. It's like storing a gun. You know, do you want to keep it next to your bed or do you want to keep it in a vault half a mile away from the house? If you need it, you got to have it at hand. It's not going to do you a lot of good. When you really need it, it's not going to do you any good by keeping your gun in a vault. It's not going to do you any good to keep your gold in somebody else's vault either, in my opinion. You at least have to be wary, right? Do what you can. Keep as much as you can close at hand. I don't care if you bury it in the backyard, you bury it in your grandmother's backyard. I don't care where you bury it. You know, hide it in the wall, whatever.
So you can bury it in my backyard now.
Doesn't have to be buried in anybody's backyard as long as you don't tell them. Oh, guess what? I buried all my gold in your backyard. Well, thanks a lot, fella. You know, we appreciate that. So, you know, keep your gold. Keep your enemies close and your gold closer. You know.
Since we're talking about gold, Al, I'd like to tell the listeners about our schedule for the next 2 weeks. You know. In 21 years, I can't remember a time when I actually took time through the holidays. And I think we're going to do that this year. Although I'll still be in the office, I'll still answer the phone, and I'll still write the orders because everybody else is closed. We're going to be on a skeleton crew, so to speak. I'll be here. Everyone else in the office is going to be gone. Things will still get processed. The mail will still be picked up and so forth. So if you want to lock in prices, call me, and we'll do it up at least up until the markets close on Thursday, I believe, at 1 o'clock. So Thursday we will be closed, though, here at Discount Gold and Silver. However, leave a message. I can always call you back, and if I can lock in prices for you, I will. So we will have a limited schedule for the next 2 weeks. As far as the radio programs, we're going to have a live show next Monday. We will be doing replays. Other than that, both Al and myself, we need a break from the radio programs. And so unless there is a major change in the markets, if the markets would collapse or gold would go up $100, we will make sure that we are here to keep you informed on what's going on. Other than that, we're going to take some time off from the radio program. We're going to play a lot of Greg Hunter's interviews, perhaps Rob West's interviews. So they will be great programs that you can listen to. And that's what I'm planning on for the next 2 weeks until we're back on January 4th. It will be business as usual. And again, I want to remind you, Monday, what date is the 28th? We will have a live show. Next Monday, we will have a live show just to update you on what's happened this week. And any questions, Al?
No, I have no questions, Maldy.
You have no questions?
No. I don't want to confuse things. Next thing you know, maybe I won't have a couple days off. I'm not going to ask any questions or we're liable to change the formula here a little bit.
No, we're going to take some time off. And again, this is the first time in 21 years that we've taken time off at this part of the year, because what happens is there's people who get time off of work. They're, you know, preparing for taxes. They have time to sit down and they pull funds out of the markets. And usually it's a fairly active time. So, and I want people to know that they can depend on Discount Gold and Silver when they want to lock in prices, if they want to sell anything, or if they want to trade something. So please, if you call and you get our voicemail, leave a message. I will call you back that day. So I want to stress that. It's very important to me. I mean, we work hard at Discount Gold and Silver. We do a lot that no one else does. Every day I hear people talk about the trust that they have in us. And you know what? That's really important to me. And I see all this other stuff that goes on. And so we've always tried to be just a little bit better or a lot better than anyone else out there. And I think we've accomplished that.
We've got an article here from 24H Gold, and it's the search for fabled Nazi gold train a bust. There may be a tunnel, but there is no train. It's no secret that the Nazis stole millions of dollars worth of art, gold, jewelry, and personal belongings of millions of people who were eventually sent to one of their many concentration camps across northern Europe. What does remain a secret are the whereabouts of the fabled Nazi gold train, which, according to local legend, was used to ferry away the Reich's riches at the end of World War II. Okay? The article continues. They have discovered a tunnel recently where they thought they'd found the gold. The gold train. Turns out they've got a tunnel, but there's no train in it, or at least that's what they're telling us. Just in the last couple of minutes here before we close down, I want to tell you a story that was told to me as true, and I believe it probably was, by a man who described himself as a former agent of the CIA. And I had an opportunity to talk to him for several hours. And he spoke at meetings we had here in Dallas, and the guy explained what really happened to the gold. Nazis looted Europe, grabbed gold and paintings and jewelry and whatever else, and he said they hid it in a submarine pen tunnel in Spain. Spain was actually in favor of the Nazis. They claimed to be neutral, but they were in favor of the Nazis. And so the Nazis stole their, hid their gold down there. Well, time came when back around after in the 1970s, when Saudi Arabia wanted to build Riyadh, their new capital inland in Saudi Arabia. And they needed cement, and they had to get it from the Blue Circle Group, which was a – this is after World War II. This is in the 60s and 70s. They had to get their concrete from Europe, and it was – and part of the deal that was eventually cut is they would get their concrete if the Nazis who were running the Blue Circle Group in Europe could dump their gold. And what happened to the Nazi gold? It was still hidden up until that time, according to the story. They pulled it out of the submarine pens in Spain. They put it on ships, moved it out into the middle of the Atlantic. The ships had coining devices on it, and they took the gold the Nazis had stolen, and they coined it into Krugerrands, right there on these ships in the middle of the Atlantic. And it was the same point where they allowed the sale of gold once again in the United States. And he claimed, and I've never done it, but he claimed that you could verify this story by comparing how much gold was produced in South Africa at the time and how many Krugerrands were sold in the United States. And he said you'd find out that they were sold way tons more Krugerrands than South Africa actually produced. And what were they? They were perfect counterfeits. You couldn't tell the difference between the ones that were making on the ships and the ones that they would make in South Africa, and they were sold into the United States. And according to the story, the Nazi gold has been dispersed into the United States with people buying gold coins. So, Krugerrands. So, I don't know. That's just an odd little story. Another, where'd the Nazi gold will go? Well, we bought it. That's the implication of the story. According to a guy from the CIA, and I believed I talked to him a number of times, for a couple hours altogether, and he spoke at our meetings. I have very little doubt, high level confidence, that the story is roughly correct, as I've just explained it to you. So if you're looking for the Nazi gold, I don't know, talk to your neighbor and see if he's got any Krugerrands. That may be where it went to. We are out of time. I want to thank all of you folks for listening. We are going to, Melody and I are going to both wish you again.
Yes.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm. And we'll
Merry
be talking
Christmas,
to
Al.
You. Merry Christmas, Melody. We'll be talking to you folks next Monday.
And I just want to say one more thing to the listeners. We do so appreciate you, because without you listening and without you supporting Discount Gold and Silver, this program wouldn't exist. This program wouldn't exist to help other people get prepared for financially. And it's so very important. So I do want to thank you for your support and for listening for all these years. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, folks. God bless you all. We'll be back Monday. In the meantime, again, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.